and welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name's Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked, and this week we're listening to Music Is My Hot, Hot Sex, wonderful name for a song, by CSS, an acronym for Conseil d'Essayer Sexy, French word, I can't pronounce, and then sexy. These people like sex, is basically what I'm coming away with, and music, which is appropriate because this week we're talking about some weird science that says music can heal stroke victims. So not quite hot, hot sex, but pretty cool, since music doesn't exist physically. So it shouldn't be able to physically heal people's brains. It makes you start to believe in hippie shit. You know, alternate medicine, consciousness, you know, other things that Western medicine doesn't make room for, that you have to say like this because it's so trippy, man. And that's what I'm talking to the hilarious comic David Huntsberger about this week. Various things that kind of shake the foundation my entire science-based worldview is based on. Because Western medicine, the thing I always believed in, is now admitting that some of those alternate forms of healing, really annoying people call them alternate modalities of healing, some of these things are achieving results that Western medicine hasn't even been able to achieve in the realm of mental health and neurology. So yeah, those people who call them alternate modalities of healing, all these years we've been rolling our eyes and making jerk-off hand motions at them for nothing, apparently. Practice, I guess, if you're a really sarcastic masturbator or handjob giver. Don't worry, feminists, I didn't forget you. Most of the conversation is based on the research of a doctor from Columbia University named Norman Doidge, who specializes in a field called neuroplasticity, the idea that the brain can be changed in ways that we didn't previously believe. He summarizes it by saying that so-called ethereal thought can change so-called material structure. So yeah, like that music can heal a stroke victim, for instance. That music can be someone's hot, hot sex. He doesn't write specifically about that, but he does tell the story of a guy who cures himself of the symptoms of Parkinson's by walking and paying attention to different things and visualizing stuff. People who were able to cure chronic pain with thoughts. I'll talk about a person who was able to get his autistic child to talk for the first time by talking to him via a puppet of Gilbert Gottfried's parrot in Aladdin. I feel like I should just stop saying examples because they just sound too crazy when you summarize them. Doidge is himself a doctor, so he goes out of his way to say there wasn't some conspiracy to get things wrong. It's just the brain is particularly hard to figure out using Western medicine. How do you use reason to figure out the thing that invented reason? Anyways, it turns out the brain is not like the heart. It can rebuild itself without surgery. It can rewire its own circuits just by imagining the right things. And that seems crazy. That is crazy. And it's what we're talking about. So hold on to your butts, I guess. I'll be back at the end for some footnotes. Talk to you then. So I'm joined in studio by David Huntsberger, co-host of the now defunct but wonderful podcast, Professor Blastoff, a great show that people can go check out. Kind of evergreen topics. You guys weren't really riffing on like stuff in the news.
Yeah, it's not topical. I've gotten into a lot of bands later on that have been, you know, long since disbanded or broken up. And then it never occurred to me in a podcast that could
essentially be the guys are that.
Yeah. I get a lot of messages and things from people that are like, hey, I feel like an idiot. I'm just now getting into it.
Right.
And then I think that'll go away and people start looking at them as just these sort of catalogs of material.
Yeah, your legend will only increase the longer you're away
well,
from it.
I don't look at it as like something you set out to make, but people feel that way if they don't listen to your podcast weekly. Like, hey, sorry, I'm a little bit behind. Like, you're under no obligation to listen in a timely way.
Yeah, the way that you guys would just talk about a random subject each week is sort of what we do here as well. So the stuff that it seems like we're talking about today, overall, it's like, there are these foundational assumptions that we make about sort of how the mind works and like even just the nature of existence that are not accurate, I guess, or that even Western medicine is now kind of admitting we don't really know shit. Like, we don't know a lot of stuff about how any of this works. And in particular, consciousness and something called neuroplasticity, which I had never heard of.
For me, it's good that it opens up what was sort of a sealed vault and these sort of dogmatic principles of like, not necessarily just materialism, like, oh, you're just the result of genetics manifesting into this living body that formed this brain that has all these connections that are the way they interact, the way they execute each, you know, synapse is firing, or whatever. That's you. Those are your thoughts. That's your mind. And now they still haven't defined the mind. And I think that's what science is kind of circling back on, maybe, is kind of saying, well, we operated under this assumption that the brain was absolutely the mind. But now there are kind of these new findings or things that just give a little bit of, I don't want to say hope, but like, they make it feel like maybe there is more to you. I don't think I've read any of the articles that entertained any notion of necessarily like a soul, but just the disconnect between knowing what the brain is and then what your mind is still exists.
You used a like trippy voice when you said what your mind is, man. But yeah, I think that's it. And I do think people, and I even tended to roll my eyes when I would hear someone talking about Eastern medicine and like the flow of energy and stuff. And in preparing for this episode, you recommended a guy named Norman Doidge or Doidge.
Doidge, yeah.
Doidge. I prefer Doidge, so we're going to pronounce it like that.
You don't like Doidge?
Doidge!
Did you ever say Doy as a kid? No, Doy.
Oh, totally.
Doidge. Yeah.
Still to this day, it's my favorite thing to say.
Say no Doy?
No Doy?
Doy. It sounds like the little stopper on the door. Doidge.
Right.
So I'm sure he got that as a kid.
Yeah, and if I ever interview him, he'll get it nonstop. But he's an actual doctor who writes about stuff like that, like people who have been cured by like just listening to recordings of stuff. He cured autism by like playing music and like Gregorian chants. He didn't, but one of the people that he wrote about in his book helped get this child who had been sort of abandoned by Western medicine as just, you know, he's an autistic kid who will never speak. And there was this sort of unorthodox therapy where people just like played music, Gregorian chants. I think they recorded the sound inside the womb of like what a baby hears when it's in a womb. And like a couple other things, his mother recording nursery rhymes. And with this like really tightly controlled and like really intricately designed system of recordings, the kid was able to start sleeping again for the first time in a long time and then started talking. And you mentioned materialism really briefly, and that's something that I think people at least know it as like, oh, you're so materialistic, you are just only into what you can buy. And like, there's also this,
we are living in a material world, and
right,
I am indeed a material girl.
Yes. But there's also this philosophical sense of like materialism where it's like we're just meat and bone and like that's it. That's all it is. And like consciousness is just like something that we made up to make sense of that. But I think that is like an interesting defining line between materialism. Western medicine is materialist. It's like you put a pill made out of, you know, molecules into your body and it changes the chemistry of your body.
Right.
And it changes the way that your brain fires. Whereas the idea with some of this neuroplasticity and just some of these healing techniques that I was coming across based on the research, it seems like it's just like something like sound or light or things like that can actually affect people's health.
Well, like Tesla was convinced that the world operated at a frequency. Each individual person had a frequency. In fact, he made this little device that he could sort of tune like a radio dial to a frequency. And he put it on a girder in this building. And the whole building, after a while, started shaking really violently. the cops showed up. I'm like, what is going on? And then they confiscated the device, and they were like, this
is just like a tiny little device.
Just a tiny little thing you would set on there, and it would just start matching the frequency, and suddenly all the molecules in that steel beam would start operating at that frequency. And so I think with exposing people to laser or sound or light, things that alter energy, I mean, optogenetics operate in a way where like they'll take like fiber optics, like a little hair-like wire, and they can insert it into the brain. This is the craziest. They'll take a virus that is non-lethal, which, who are these lazy viruses that are just like, we're viruses, nothing to worry about.
Right.
And they'll put them in a person's brain, and the virus is attracted to certain types of cells. So they'll go to a certain part of the brain. But they'll weave into the like the genetics of that virus. I'm certainly not the person to
this whole podcast is just me using like really poorly chosen words to describe like brilliant things.
Yeah.
That, like,
So, what they will integrate into this virus are, I keep wanting to say molecules, but they're just, I guess that's what it is, that the electrons of which react to light. And so they will...
Photoactive.
Photoresponsive sort of material. And then they put in this fiber optic thing with a little light on the end of it and fire it, and it'll cause people to like suddenly just start feeling pain or feeling really cold. I don't know, because it's activating that part of their brain.
Because scientists are dicks.
It's such a dick move, but that's a good way to test. When I first read that, I was like, why would that be the default thing? Like, oh, I'm cold. Maybe making them laugh is a little bit more intangible. Like, are you really laughing? Or are you just, you know, are you scared right now? But pain is definitive. Like, that sucks. This does not feel good. And so they can know that they are for sure activating a certain region of the brain. So I think all these things tie in a way where, like you said, like playing the chants or music, people start hearing about him and they start bringing stuff to him. And he is not someone that's like some shaman or something. He's more from a traditional Western side. But being exposed to these things and how our neuroplasticity is, I think, exciting, if nothing else, for people that have had some sort of brain trauma and or are just getting old and feel like, I can't learn anything new. You know, he had that friend that had Parkinson's that sort of taught himself to do everything over again. Like, if I just focus on walking, if I'm just mindful of every bite of food I take, I can do it. But if I lose track of my thoughts, the fork starts going all over the place, or I fall over when I'm walking, or I shuffle my feet. Monks that were able, like, hours and hours of meditating, your brain does change. And I think all of us would agree, no matter how skeptical or like locked into kind of, no, we're just molecules, we're bags of water, our brains are just a result of us being a mix of chromosomes from our parents, and that blah, 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 or we're amino acids and we're proteins. And I think all of us would agree that our brains from when we were younger to now, with constant access to information in our pockets and being dependent on texts and emails and all that shit, like, we're different. I think our brains are wired differently, where it's like a new pathway in our mind or in our brains of learning these things. And so that, to me, if nothing else, like, I went to a talk that he did, and that was the thing that stuck with me. Like, oh, what if I could like teach myself now to like play violin or something like that?
Yeah, no, that's actually a thing that I don't know where I kind of absorbed this fact, but I definitely had thought that once you reach a certain age, you start getting dumber, or like you start becoming less with it, because like old people kind of have that reputation in our culture, because our culture just hates old people. So they're just like, they don't know what they're talking about. And there's like all these, really hopeful things. Like, Western medicine had kind of, I think, convinced me that the brain was sort of a one-way street, where it was like, if you got brain damage, that was it. Like, you then spoke weird for the rest of your life or whatever it caused. And this materialist view of the brain, for a while now, we've thought and we've known that certain regions of the brain are responsible for certain things. So, like, there's a region of the brain for language, and people who have a stroke in that region of the brain have difficulty with language. But what we didn't make room for, I guess, at that time when we discovered that 100 years ago, is that that can change. So, if you train people in the right way, even if that part of the brain is ruined and they no longer can speak, the language part of the brain can like shift to a different part of the brain.
What I enjoyed about him is that I think he comes from a place where, like, me listening, fairly skeptical in that. And I think we're all just the result of how we were raised, and of course our genetics, you know, a mix of, like, you were raised by two methodical left brain engineering types. All of this would seem like nonsense. And he seems like he kind of came from that, but then being exposed to story after story after story, like the one that he told in his talk that I thought was really fascinating was, I can't remember this guy's name, DeLacy or something like that. He was this, I believe, a Mexican guy, and he was a surgeon. And his father was a poet and had a really like massive stroke, and they were ready to pronounce him dead. And I guess he was working in the United States. He flew down to, drove down to Mexico and like loaded his father's body up, this little 5 foot tall guy, and took him home. And they were like, good luck, man. His brain is fried. I mean, it was a full stroke. So he took him home and just kind of like nursed him back to where he could at least, you know, he's breathing on his own. He's eating a little bit. And then he just taught him to crawl, taught him to speak again like a baby, you know, like making the sounds. Here's how you read. And fast forward to like, he got his father at age, you know, 75 back to like walking, talking again. He was writing poetry again from this fried out, you know, stroked brain. And then when his father died, he died of a heart attack while mountain climbing.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And so his son, the surgeon, did an autopsy and looked. And sure enough, like the brain is just all the pathways fried. Like you could see these lesions and missing areas. And so he had kind of taught himself, like you were saying, from totally different parts of the brain to be himself again. You know, it doesn't go into a ton of detail. I would love to like see video of this, or like if he was... The poetry was horrendous.
It's just really bad.
Or his eyes could be like looking all over the place, or he spoke in a different way, or, you know, being back to being a person is a lot different than like, oh, it's exactly Jack. He's back. We fixed him.
I think there are interviews out there with people who completely were in a vegetative state and then came back from it. But like what that seems like, was that just like a period of darkness? Because that's another thing that you wanted to talk about today that nobody really understands is consciousness. And like, what is the difference between being conscious and unconscious? And there's this really interesting, I think it was Radiolab, where they interviewed somebody who had grown up fully deaf, and they had grown up in a tribe where they didn't have sign language. Uh-huh. So they hadn't had any language for the first 30 years of their life. And then they went into the city and like learned sign language. And just the way that they describe it, it was like almost like they can't even really remember what happened before they had language. And the theory, I guess, is that language is not just a thing that we use to express ourselves. It's actually what gives us consciousness. It's like this system that makes it possible for us to be self-aware.
If you've ever like gotten into a second language or people speaking multiple languages, I'm always curious like how they think. Because if you're immersed, there was a summer where I spent speaking a ton of Spanish. And I would have dreams or like even thoughts where I was speaking kind of totally in Spanish. And so your consciousness is the same. You as a person is the same, but the language is critical. And I that's fascinating that like the way that sort of psychologists and even maybe anthropologists, I don't know, anyone that's interested in humans would love to get their hands on feral children or separated twins, because they want to know like, does your surroundings impact it? What influences you? What makes a human being? How do we define, you know, if you just put this exact same DNA together, and then the best thing you can do for researchers is separate those twins, because they're like, oh, sweet. All right, different conditions. I read this book, The Blank Slate, and there's this New Yorker cartoon in it where it just shows like these two dudes sitting in a patent office. They're both holding these like wildly intricate like inventions. And then it says, at long last, the, you know, so-and-so twins are reunited. Oh. As if like through very different circumstances, they both went out and invented this really strange thing and then ended up meeting each other in this patent office.
And that's kind of what you hear about those stories, right? That identical twins who are separated at birth like end up marrying the same woman, or like obviously not that, but like end up going into like the same profession. And it's like, it's a complete nature.
Have a predetermined like, I like this type of color, I like this type of music. But yeah, the thing with someone not being able to speak or hear, you know, you're alive in the world, but what are you?
Right.
Until you start putting in thoughts and a way to interpret them. That's just so strange that you couldn't remember it. Because if you have no language and you touch something, how do you not?
Well, like the thing that my experience with that is just listening to music loud on headphones, or like listening to a podcast or something where I'm totally engrossed in that and the words in my mind are not my own.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm like walking my dog, sometimes, I'll like get back from the walk and like not remember a single thing of the walk, because I feel like I need language to even be making sense of the world around me in a way that like kind of stores itself in my memory.
I don't know if you entertain this idea, but if you do, like, you like to think, and this could just be the way that I'm predisposed to do because of my genetics. It could be just purely a genetic thing that I like the idea that if I died, there's this soul type element where it's me and all my thoughts kind of drifting into the ether or something, kind of go, well, that was strange. Well, I was a human on Earth. That was wild.
Right.
And yet if you have like a massive head injury or you're passed out for a while or you're, you know, you're just in a weird state, like you were saying, does it exist at all? Or did it ever really exist? Kyle would always bring that up on Blast Off, that like people in a coma, they're not, there's no brain waves. There's no signal that anything's happening in there. And yet there's got to be that weird feeling of like, yeah, but there's something trapped in there. That's an empty body. Like the body is useless, but in there is a soul being like, you guys, I can still see a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Another radio. I'm just going to be quoting Radiolab nonstop in this episode.
Welcome to the Radiolab tribute podcast.
Right, exactly. But where they thought somebody was totally brain dead, like they had what medicine considers brain death, like just a flat line. But they went in and like they somehow hooked the brain up to this game where the brain would visualize a game of tennis, mm-hmm. and like hit the ball to the person and the person hit the ball back to them.
Oh,
so
wow.
Like they were like still there in some way, even though it was total brain death. So like it was just this like really creepy moment. Top five creepiest Radiolab moments. We'll go through the other four at
It'd
the
be
end
like if you put a fishing line down the smallest little opening in a mine shaft that had caved in that was like a mile deep.
Right.
And then you just felt a little tug.
Right. Yeah.
Ah, like, damn it.
Right. Yeah. Super creepy. Yeah, and like how many people have we just like taken off life support who we could have played brain tennis with?
Well, what I always think though is like, how important is it to be on Earth? If there's a soul in this empty machinery, if there's something there, maybe then it lives on. Maybe if it's clearly proven that it can live in something that is by all accounts not living other right. than being like artificially, you know, kept going by like some sort of life support, then maybe there's reason to think it would keep going if that thing did completely terminate. And
right.
whether that's a soul disappearing into the depths of, or whatever, maybe like, I don't even know how to, it's not like a file being lost in, you know, a hard drive somewhere or something
right.
like that that would reappear magically. But where does it go? I think like our interpretation of things that exist, like, well, you take it out of this drawer and you put it in this other drawer. It's got to be in something. But if our consciousness is more like part of the universe or something like
right.
that, who knows, man?
Who knows, man? Hey guys, we're listening to Dry the Rain by The Beta Band, which is a wonderful song about nostalgia, which is a thing that can make you feel warmer, not in a figurative sense. Nostalgia makes the body feel warmth. Yeah, it's probably why cultures throughout history have had these nostalgia-based holidays around the winter solstice. We have Christmas, which I think the last new song that got added to the Christmas song rotation was Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas. And this song reminds me of that and what we're talking about today because, first of all, lyrically, it starts out talking about choking on a vitamin tablet the doctor's giving him in the hopes of saving him, but instead, he goes to a junkie, not advisable, but it's what he does. I think he calls him a junkyard fool. I think that would clearly mean a junkie. Anyways, asks him to dry the rain, starts hallucinating about spray on dust, which seems to be like a false nostalgia thing. It's also responsible for the most 90s moment of the most 90s movie of the late 90s, High Fidelity, a movie based around a record store immediately before those went extinct, and at a certain point, Jack Black says to John Cusack, or vice versa, watch this, I'm about to sell 5 copies of the Beta Band's album, and plays this song, and the people are transfixed and do his bidding. Back when music was a thing that could be bottled and sold in person. Anyways, nostalgia is powerful, and therefore, so is music, or vice versa, is what I'm saying. So nothing. I'm saying nothing. I hope you enjoy the track and buy the Beta Band's music, or at least buy this song, while you're enjoying these messages from our wonderful sponsor. Timestamps.com. Sometimes it doesn't feel like there are enough hours in the day. No one has an old-fashioned 9-to-5 job anymore. You know, if you work here in the 21st century with the rest of us, then you occasionally work nights, you occasionally work weekends, holidays even. So why deal with the post office's old-fashioned hours and horrible lines and love of closing for even the most minor holidays? Quit going to the post office and wasting your time when you can buy and print official U.S. postage from home with Stamps.com. They even send you a digital scale, which automatically calculates the exact postage you need for any letter, package, and any class of mail. It's a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters, and you get special discounts you wouldn't normally get at the post office. So here's the special offer for Cracked listeners. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my promo code CRACKED for a 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer that includes free postage and a digital scale. Free postage, you guys. How could you pass that up? So don't wait. Go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the page and type in CRACKED. That's Stamps.com and enter CRACKED. Yeah, even just anesthesiologists are people who, like, are specialized in just putting you under the right amount where they don't kill you, but you totally lose consciousness. And have you ever, like, been put under?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like you go away and come immediately back, and it's like there was nothing in between the two things.
But there was, because, like, one, I tried counting down.
Right.
Someone told me to do that. The anesthesiologist was like, we don't do that anymore.
That's old man.
But my dad was like, you got to do it. It's fun. And I was like, adamant. Like, when I got my wisdom teeth out, I didn't feel like I needed any pain medication afterward or anything.
Right.
Like, I really like trying to believe in that and, like, focus pain to a different part of, you know.
Right.
That goes into neuroplasticity a little bit. If you can convince your brain, like, hey, this part of your cellular structure right now is pinging, going, ow, just transfer that elsewhere.
Right.
You can do Swayze and Roadhouse and pain don't hurt and remove it. And so, like, I was trying to do that with the wisdom teeth, but also with the, and I did it to some degree of success.
You were counting backwards, you mean? And
well, no, with the wisdom teeth, I woke up and was just like, called all my friends and was like, we're going out tonight. Like, trying to just completely.
Just pain don't hurt.
Yeah, pain don't hurt. I'm fine. We're going out.
Deutsch cites that a number of times in his book to prove the Swayze principle.
Yeah.
Of pain don't hurt.
It's critical. And so with the anesthesiology, I tried counting. I got to like, I started from 99 and got to maybe 96. And then I don't remember anything. And then, like you were saying, time just immediately, I was back. But suddenly I looked down, I was like sucking on an ice cube that I had in my hand. And and the nurse was chatting with me, and I kind of like, was just loosely waking up, weird colors and shapes, and where the hell am I? And my parents came in, and like they're wheeling me on this gurney away. And the nurse said something to the effect of like, oh, your son's really chatty. It was nice talking with them.
Yeah.
So I'd been like having this conversation with her for a while, totally unaware of it.
It's like blacking out if you've ever drank too much and blacked out, except instead of feeling like you were away for a long time, it just happened almost immediately. Yeah, I woke up from having my wisdom teeth out and was like out in the lobby walking down to my car when I came to, and the doctor told my mom apparently that when I came back I had been like, give me more of that, like give me more of the drugs. And my mom was like, is there something you want to tell me? Like, apparently I like was confessing to something. But yeah, it's crazy that you can have experiences and totally be completely unaware of them. Like, what is the difference between you chatting that nurse up and you talking right now, like, other than not remembering it? Is that not consciousness just because it looks like it? But
yeah, I think it's a present tense sort of thing, because there are certainly things where you weren't blacked out, you didn't have a head injury, and if you went through a photo album and went, oh, I totally forgot about that, yeah, we met that guy and had that conversation, like, that doesn't currently exist to you. So in a way, it was never there, and then you see it like, oh yeah, that was there. I think like I had a concussion once, and then I got back from I was on the ski team, and we were terrible. And I got that. We were like this
just all falling down constantly.
We were just the poor school. And it was like this weird program where you could, all of us did it because it was like the cheapest way to go skiing. So we would race, do terribly, and then like, woohoo, free skiing the rest of the day.
Right.
And the other teams had like those tight onesies, and we just had like our bulky coats.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we were horrible. And so I went off a jump and hit my head, and I mean, I was messed up. Like on the bus ride home, kept asking my friend the same question every 30 seconds where he was like, dude, you need some help. And then we get to school and the coach goes, all right, drive safe. And I just climb in my truck and drove. And it was, I remember feel like when you are blacked out drunk and you're kind of trying to navigate, and sometimes like the most poetic side of you comes out there. That's really, I see the world as it is, man. And other times there's a part of you that's like, just keep this stupid thing on track. Just stay upright. And so I'm trying to drive with that kind of like, all right, just focus on the road. And so I remember it. I don't necessarily know if there was like a little me as we try to, I think sometimes we think of like this little being in there running all the gears and levers.
Yeah. And you're saying that's not scientifically accurate. The little tiny person. I thought Meet Dave was a documentary.
Eddie most Murphy scientists movie. Subscribe to that. Yeah. But the wisdom teeth, the head injury, you and I right now, like I feel like we're present. We're not on any medication as far as I know. We're both
a lot of pills right now, man.
Pulling it off pretty nicely. I think that we would say like this is the level of consciousness where not inhibited by pain or anything like that. I'm not going, sorry, man, I've got a horrible migraine.
Right.
I can't focus. Like I full focus, full retention. But is there a little voice in my head right now? Is there a little thing, you know, your subconscious? Or is there, like, people that have that voice go, that was stupid. Why'd you say that? What are you doing? Stop looking over there. Sit up straight. Where's that? What is that thing? Is that thing always there and we're not aware of it? Is that the thing that's driving you when you are in a vegetative state and it's inside? Like, oh, you look so stupid. Get up. You're just laying here.
Questions like that. I was a philosophy major, so I, like, asked them for grades in college. But asking them in any real, like, medical or scientific sense always felt bullshitty to me, and like, oh, that's like a, you know, those are stupid questions. And I guess like just doing the research for this podcast last night and like reading, I think it was an interview with Deutsch where he was saying that there's no money basically in those sorts of questions. And also like the cures where it's just listening to some monks chanting, like that's not going to make the pharmaceutical industry any money. So like the reason that it's not just that we're in this materialist society because that makes sense. It's also because like there's no money, first of all, in the question of like where consciousness goes, but also like in any cures that aren't in pill form,
you know,
that can't be like put into a bottle and like sold to us.
Yeah, and you know, the monks meditating are working on that, maybe the conscious self and the unconscious self. And it seems to me that like that would be the hardest thing to cure or figure out, like your soul. Like, oh, maybe my soul needs help. Like, whew, that's brutal. You know, if you're having those thoughts that you have, they might be able to hook you up and monitor your brain waves and go, well, that person's having some thoughts. And they say, what thoughts are you having? And you'd say, oh, what they'll do a lot of times is they'll show people images and then they'll watch how the brain lights up. But they could ask you, like, what were you thinking then? And you might lie. You might not even really know. And so I think there's a part of me that thinks, like, the people who were deaf that have no recollection of anything prior to language.
Right.
If they died and say, like, being alive on planet Earth is just kind of like a ride through an amusement park or something like that. Say there is this afterlife world and they say, how was it? There's a part of me that feels like they would go, oh, strange. I couldn't hear anything.
Right.
I could touch and I could smell. And they might remember a lot more that way as opposed to like remembering it in the physical form in this conscious world. It might be totally different. That seems bananas, but there's something about it I like.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. That idea, what I was saying about like words being the thing that provides consciousness to us is how I justify eating meat, basically, because like, well, animals don't have words. So even though like my dogs seem like they love me genuinely, they don't have words. So it's like a less complex, less like real form of existence, but it does seem like animals have consciousness to a large degree. Didn't you grow up working with animals or something?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up around a lot of cowboy stuff, so horses and cows and dogs and things like that. And I've seen people go both ways on that. Like, oh, I grew up on a farm. I do not eat meat.
Right.
Other people are like, I hate them. I can't wait to eat them. I think later it's
that latter point of view. Just like, fuck it.
I helped my cousin raise a couple sheep one summer they're aggressively dumb to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, where I just, like, I don't care about them. I don't think they have...
Just nothing going on behind the eyes, just...
Yeah, I mean, it, like, so dumb to... There's a reason they're easily herded up. If you were creating a magical Garden of Eden world, and you'd be like, I want to give people something that's just meat on legs. The sheep is pretty close to that.
Right.
There's nothing really companionable about them or enjoyable or endearing. They're just real dumb.
So, like, they earned the nickname sheep for a reason, like being herded and that personality that we describe as sheep
thought about, like, and I've been doing a little bit of stand-up about this, where I just like the concept of Carl Sagan's sort of where the universe's way of experiencing itself.
Right.
And imagine dark energy spilling out from the Big Bang and kind of just having this overall consciousness of itself, and yet it can't see, it can't feel, it can't really know itself, but kind of going, what is this? I wish there was a way that we could interpret this and analyze it, and extrapolating and taking that to where now they're growing and they're evolving and moving from little bacteria in the ocean to then crawling out in fish and then to be where we are. Consciousness would almost seem like kind of irrelevant. But I think if it was, you know, the ether, and you could sign up to go in as a being, a human wouldn't be ideal to everyone. Imagine millions, infinite amounts of, like, these souls, these bits of unconsciousness that, like, oh, I want to go see it. They'd be like, all right, I'm just going to heads up you. Like, a human is cool because you can talk, you can see people, you can laugh, but it's brutal. People are going to die and it's going to hurt your feelings.
Like,
and
weird, complex forms of pain.
Yeah, that,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, endlessly. All the colors of pain.
And you're going to feel them all the time and think about them. There are other, you could go in as a flower, you know, live like a few months. You don't get to look around, you don't get to see much. Or you can be a sheep, you get to see things, but you get to talk and laugh, but you don't feel shit. You just like, and you're real dumb.
Right.
I think a lot of people would sign up like, that sheep sounds pretty good.
Right, yeah. Like, I'll be there a little bit. It's the most simple pleasure.
Yeah, you don't live all that long. Like, then you could come back and be like, I think I'm ready to try human. Like, you're going to jump from sheep to human? Like, yeah, I think I can do it. Pfft, dude, you got to go like chimpanzee first.
Right,
then maybe.
Right. And I think that a lot of addiction is turning yourself back into the sheep. A lot of like drug abuse and stuff like that.
Oh,
it's just like, I want to make things binary, very simple, like pleasure, pain, turn the brain off.
Absolutely.
And
it's a great, when you escape that for a little bit, you know, I don't know if like how much you partake in drugs and alcohol or whatever, but when you escape it just for a little bit, just that feeling of like, kind of like just heightened, like just suspension of feeling, it's pretty nice.
It can be great.
Yeah. People that go through life without ever augmenting their reality in any way, like, that's pretty admirable, I think, because that's tough.
I do think that everybody should try psychedelics at least once. And I've heard very smart people say that, so I can feel okay saying that for sure.
When you watch any movie that deals with our involvement with the native people, we now have, you know, evolved to this place as humanity where we are Western medicine, and we know about the brain. We've done studies. We're just this. And I think there's something so romantic about the way they lived and worthwhile about like being good to the earth and trusting it as this sort of living entity that cares for us. And granted, like, ancient civilizations did sort of the same thing, where like they didn't know what clouds were or the sun.
Right.
You might think that like, oh, it's the god of wind, but there also are things and like cycles in the planet that if you do psychedelics and kind of come into touch with some of those things, it's worthwhile. It definitely opens some channels in your mind where you're like, oh, okay, I feel differently about where I am.
Yeah, like a big problem for Western European settlers when they came over was people would immediately run off and join their tribes. Like, that happened. Like, that's a thing that got written out of history because we like to think that we were showing them. But, like, actually, when you go back and look at the primary firsthand documents, there's all this writing about, like, the problem of going savage because people just, there was, like, a completely different mind frame that I think was very attractive and is very attractive. And we talk about like the god of wind and stuff and think that like they must have been very stupid and like pictured a man who like was wind or something. But that's actually just kind of based on our understanding of God being like a guy with a white beard up in the clouds. And I think a lot of what their religions were about were more closer to just there being like a sort of spirit that infuses nature that if you talk to any hippie, they'll agree. But yeah, the idea of like the different types of existence is really easy. We were going through a pitch today about patterns that appear over and over again in nature. And one that I found really interesting is that the way that different animals use energy, like their cells use energy, the efficiency with which they use energy is exactly the same as how cities of that size use energy. So like a blue whale, their cells use energy incredibly efficiently. Mm-hmm. And so does New York City, which is basically the blue whale of...
Yeah.
And I do wonder if sometimes, and this is just a vaguely related mindfucky thing, I do wonder, you know, when people talk about artificial intelligence and they're like, well, you know, that won't come for a long time because they're picturing a single humanoid robot. But I do wonder if, like, the internet is already artificial intelligence. Like, it's already, like, kind of controlling us. And it's, like, this one collective consciousness that is getting people to give up their privacy. And, like, if you view that as its own form of existence or, like, its own entity that has consciousness, I wonder if that isn't an even higher level of existence from what we have.
But humans as an organism, there's this book called Non-Zero about cultural evolution, and kind of non-zero meaning that like everything you do has a positive sum. So as opposed to a game where like one person loses and one person wins, there's a zero sum there.
Right.
Like this is, we're going to have some positive to come out of this. And our body, the organism that is us, has different things at play, reproductive material and other cells like skin cells that are willing to sort of flake off and die for the good of the group, good of the organism. And humans, a lot of times people want to look at us as like the planet Earth as this organism and we're just a part of it, which the book kind of says isn't quite the case. But I think like with Twitter and our ability to function on like with a global consciousness, something Osama bin Laden.
That would be a good name for a ramen place.
So Osama bin Laden dies, and within 10 seconds, the whole planet knows. And so there is this kind of, if you think of just this like, like we are conscious on a weird level that is only increasing.
Right.
And then it makes you feel individually so much more inconsequential. Not that you already didn't, but you know, if you're off the grid and you're out there building a castle out of rocks hand by hand, you'd feel like very important. And then you'd watch the world just speed by and everyone just be a part of this moving thing that was like experiencing the world, communicating. And all it would take is for us to get contact with another planet and it would just be like a chat group. I mean, it would be our planet all at once and their planet all at once.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the thing you're describing with Twitter is part of this new generation. And like, that's why I think there's like a bigger generation gap almost between people who are my parents' age and people who are just a little bit younger than me and always had the internet, because my parents' generation, you know, is worried about privacy. I heard somebody the other day who's like around my dad's age be like, I don't do Facebook because, you know, Facebook, they want too much information. And that's a thing that like a lot of people thought. They were like, I'm not giving any organization my phone number. And then that's not even a consideration at all for like people who are on the crack team who are like 5 years younger than me. They're just like, what are you talking about? Like,
which is so strange though, because you think like them experiencing the Cold War, and there was a book at some point that someone could flip through, find your name and see your address right next and go to your house.
Right.
Like we live in a period where that's not really, people can't do that. They can, might, if you put your address, they can Google Earth and look right into you.
Right.
But it's still, people are willing to say, like, no one cares that much. People think about themselves. They're not thinking about how to, like, check in on my house.
Right.
Everyone has so much information, it's kind of a lottery pick. Like, if they choose me and steal my identity, shit.
Right.
But everyone's is out there. All of our social security numbers have been entered into our bank statement, et cetera. But I think, like, where I kind of side with both, I don't know if you're like this, like, I get the sort of like, I don't like, they constantly use the term millennial, but for lack of a better term, like that group, the young people and beyond them, and then people who are 50 plus, 55, whatever, you know, being raised on like 1984 and A Brave New World and having this vision into like, we're at the precipice where that is, it's invading our space on a level where like you exist more as an avatar, more digitally than you ever did as like a handshake and eye contact. And I'm gonna physically write you a letter and mail it. I was reading this article today about how like our brains are being changed so much by email because it never feels like it's a hassle. People will ask you for things. You'll feel compelled to respond because it's off-putting to you as a person to be like, God, I just ignored them. Right. Whereas if they had handwritten it to you, you'd be like, I'm not wasting a stamp on that. Just something right. as little as like writing their address and putting a stamp and going, it's like 50 cents. Is right. this person worth it?
Yeah.
But with email, you don't do that. So I think like the kids that grew up only touching a screen and swiping
right.
and every parent that was from that generation that kind of went, I read 1984. I don't want that to happen. Then you have a kid and it's really stressful and you can put this magical device in their lap that they can swipe on and right. it occupies them. Like, oh, Jesus, here you go. I don't care what the repercussions are from that. But now all those kids grow up, you start telling them about like the digital world and all the dangers of it. And they go, I don't know. I didn't get introduced to email. I didn't get introduced to smartphones. I just was born with them.
Exactly. The argument I always hear from them is like, well, I didn't do anything wrong. So like, why would I worry about it? And it's like, well, but read 1984. It's like, it could go very badly if the government decided to fuck with you. And they're like, but why would they fuck with me? Like,
yeah.
No.
Well,
I'm
people
good.
That say, it's so weird. So many friends of mine that I thought would be the types of like, yeah, we got to start a revolution, man. And throw these phones away and go back to flip phones. Like right. that was acceptable. Or even just a landline was so nice that like if it rang and you were gone, that was it. There was no tether to you. And people think about that and they go, you know what, dude? It's pretty nice being able to check in on shit immediately. I'm in line at the bank. Like, what did people do before? You hear a lot of people talk about that. Like, people would just put the newspaper up in front of their face.
Right.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
Don't bother me.
Right. Pull and their derby cap down. And, yeah.
So I don't think it's people are all. It's just the most convenient way for us to ignore each other in close proximity. Be like right near each other. But I do wish it would. I saw this thing in the UK where they have these televisions now that can monitor. Like, did you see Ex Machina?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, so good. And at one point, she examines like his. She's like, "Oh, your micro reactions," meaning like our faces do these little things we're unaware
right,
of. That
right.
kind of it's showing me your
micro gestures or whatever.
Yeah,
micro expressions. That's it.
And so this TV can now pinpoint that. Can like
oh, really?
View you watching it and determine like they did it first on babies, trying to study like here's what babies are feeling, even though you can't see a lot in their faces.
Right.
They don't do a ton. So this software was designed for that, and now they're putting it in television so that they can watch you watching things, and you know all it comes from is ad revenue. They're like,
right.
we want to see how people are responding to this ad placement. Where do they light up? Where do they get? And that is the most invasive. I mean, do you ever see the Pearl Jam video for Evolution?
Uh-uh.
It's Evolution. Such a cool animated
video. No,
keep going.
I want to hear the rest of the song. Maybe I did see it.
I'm a man. I'm the first mammal to wear pants. It's so great. And the video's phenomenal. It's this cool animated thing. And like the computer jumps out and implants all these wires into the person watching it. And suddenly they're just sort of this husk that information is transferred through. And that was, 15 years ago or something
right.
like that. And that wasn't even cutting edge then. Those thoughts have been happening endlessly.
Right.
They get proliferated, and yet we all just go, eh, it's still
right.
fun to, like, play on this phone. It's still fun to, like... So what is the harm in it? As we evolve, what are we worried about? Losing our consciousness? Is that where it comes from? Like, oh,
right.
shit, I'm just going to become this digital ones and zeros. There's not me, man. I got my own thoughts, man.
Right. Yeah, I do think that there's less of a concern of losing your individuality with the younger generation. And like, for instance, the idea that like they're using those micro expression readers to market to them, that's something that we've also noticed just in like publishing 7 articles a day and like seeing what hits with our audience and what doesn't. We've noticed that like people find marketing really interesting in
mm-hmm.
a way that's like not, oh, we don't want to be marketed to. It's like almost an art form
yeah,
that they
yeah,
find
yeah.
interesting. And like, so it's almost like that's the blood that's pumping through the system is money or,
yeah.
Like
oh, man,
currency.
You could get into a whole thing there about like how art is just commerce now. There isn't a lot, I think that, again, that middle ground of those ages you referenced, people that grew up with Led Zeppelin and The Who and The Beatles and people that, hey, they put a lot of work into the album and every song is a layer to this and the album art itself has all these like mythological things and they really made this thing. They made this, all, and now it's just singles, and it's released digitally.
Right.
And you'll see young people going like, this was really great. They got all their friends, and they started this Twitter campaign, but then they flipped that into like a Snapchat thing. So many people got like sharing this song
right.
that the song got really popular. Isn't that cool? And you're like, that's the least artistic thing I've ever heard.
Right.
And yet the marketing is artistic, but what you made is a piece of shit. It's
right.
just this horrible, catchy, auto-tuned trash. It's removing the human element from everything. There's like IKEA. There's no more like, oh, I can see chisel marks where that was made. I can see like where the brush strokes are. Anything right. that shows like a human hand. Like, no, it was manufactured. Isn't that cool? Isn't
right.
that cool? They figured out how to market this horseshit.
Yeah, the marketing is the art form almost. And I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but there was a notion of being a sellout. Like mm-hmm. that was a thing that people were like, you fucking sellout. And that's just gone. Like yeah. that doesn't exist anymore because like the thing that would be considered selling out by the people who I went to high school with is now the thing that kids in high school look at admiringly.
And oh, yeah. Like, yeah. Oh, man, if we could just get our song in a minivan commercial.
Right, woo, exactly.
We'd be doing all right.
Right.
And that just shows that, like, the people have always been right. Aldous Huxley was right. The hipster art kids that said, man, they're just advertising just a way to corrupt music and true artistic expression. They were right. You're going to either stick to your guns and make music that you love and then wash dishes and try to tour in the summer when you can. Or you're going to sell it to a beer company and make right. enough money to like, well, I live and my tax return says musician, but what did I do? I just sold it to like this gross conglomerate that I right. hate in principle. I mean, it's so tough right now.
I do wonder if there's going to be, yeah, a moment when everyone's like, oh, this system sucks, you know, because like everybody's fully bought in now. Everybody yeah. like, at least in this generation, is just all in on sort of materialism and being marketed to and being part of the overall kind of hive mind, which is how we got into this in the first place, I think, because we were
talking about consciousness. Well, the hive mind is interesting because, yeah. like, your consciousness, meaning you want to feel unique.
Right.
The hive mind puts it out there sort of subconsciously as a collective. Here's where we all think society's going to go. Robots, artificial intelligence,
right.
prosthetic limbs, being able to extract your consciousness and the singularity and living forever.
Right.
And everyone goes, yeah, we don't believe that when we see it. And then they say things about art and like retaining your identity as a human and why are you making things? You really love it or is right. it just a job? And as people go on, there's no united front because then that would feel unoriginal. It would feel like your consciousness was just part, well, I have to feel this way because I'm an artist.
Right.
So then you have your friends who are in bands who start going, dude, who cares? We're right. all going to die anyway. If Bud Light wants to pay me, great. I don't care.
Right.
So then other people go, oh, why was I being so pretentious about wanting my art to be distributed in such a precious way?
Right.
I should let whoever wants to pay me buy it. It's all right. meaningless
there's
anyway.
There's a gravity to it, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's almost like a, once an idea takes hold in the collective unconscious, people sort of gravitate towards whatever that assumption is, I feel like.
Yeah, which is a bummer because I think we all ostensibly feel like, yeah, but it would be better if people were making art because they really loved it. And there's still plenty of people doing that. But it's weird that, like you said, it totally went away, the notion of selling out. Good and bad. The people who sell out get to go like, man, no one's even judging us anymore.
Right, yeah, this is awesome.
Unabashedly do it.
In a VIP lounge, high-fiving each other, just being like, this is the fucking best. Yeah. Maybe getting back to neuroplasticity, just in terms of things that Western medicine has nothing for, the placebo effect was really interesting, something he was talking about, because they were saying that like that is now a medical reality. The placebo effect just exists.
Yeah.
And that's insane.
Well, because so many people will tell you, like, vitamins, there's no reason to take vitamins.
Right.
There's nothing you can't.
There's sugar pills.
Yeah, there's sugar. And if you get sick, there's not a magical vitamin C cure. There's
right.
nothing you can do. You're just, your immune system is what it's going to be, and you've got to fight it off. And yet, every doctor will go, yeah, there's something about, like, you give people these things, they cure themselves faster than they normally would.
Right. Yeah, they were saying that I think it only lasts for 15 days, but just the fact that it exists at all and is like a medical reality, there's your proof that it's not a materialist thing. That
oh, yeah,
materialism
totally.
Like can't be the way that we view medicine anymore and can't be the way that we view the human body. But like that's something that's just totally absent from how I think 99% of the world is educated, you know?
Yeah, well, especially us. I mean, you know, they say things
or,
like
I guess 99% of the world that is exactly like me.
The way you always hear people say, like, you'll beat this. You can
right.
fight it and you can beat it, regardless of whatever that is, typically some sort of illness or disease. You can beat this. But a doctor can't really say that. They never do, like, give you your diagnosis and then go, hey, listen, you got to mentally like rewire your brain
right.
and really focus. And you know how you can generate that with a placebo? That's what I need you to do here.
Right.
A doctor would never say that.
No, right. Could. Yeah,
your friends might. And you know, we would look at it as ridiculous if people came over and like put their hands on you or something. Just like, here you go. Here's some of our energy. But in ancient cultures and probably currently things like that are happening. Like, yeah, it makes no sense. But this person, they healed up. Somehow,
right.
miraculously, these things happen.
And like, that's the thing that Doige is writing about. And people, it's worth just Googling his name, Doidge, and reading some of the interviews with him, because he's finding proven cases of things like laying on of hands and transferring of energy, proving ways that they work. It makes sense to me that like doctors are dismissive of that, because you kind of want your doctor to be cocky. Like, you don't yeah, want the doctor yeah. to be like, I don't know. We don't really understand any of this shit, man. Like, that's terrifying how little they know. But like, at a certain point, it seems like they started buying their own bullshit a little bit. And so they are really cocky and like dismissive and will like give somebody 6 months to live. And then that person, like using alternate things that Western medicine doesn't recognize, can, you know, live 6 years. And, you know, there are these isolated cases that aren't necessarily documented in like widespread studies because they're really hard to replicate. But you can like tell the story of an individual person who cured their Parkinson's with walking, like that guy in the book. And
Western medicine gets put in like this little category where people go, I know people who are critical of that, we always assume like they're kind of idiots.
Right.
You broke your arm, you're gonna rub some sage on it.
Right.
You gotta like grab some liniment and rub that on.
Right.
You gotta have surgery. You've gotta reset the bone. And I think everyone at least would acknowledge that that's had a pretty good success rate.
Yeah.
Cast up the limb, reset the bone. It's probably gonna heal. We've studied that scientifically, but I think we've dismissed a lot of times, like you said, like Parkinson's and things that involve a little bit more like, there's not a
autism,
placebo.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like if
that
you
we just don't understand through Western medicine at all.
Yeah. The kids with ADD that like go through behavioral therapy and sort of speech patterns, learning how to think a little bit differently. It's almost like meditating. It's like
right.
your brain wants to do this so badly. You've got to rewire it. You've
right.
got to like tell it how to communicate with itself differently. And it's cool to find that like, not only is that not crazy there, it's starting to be something that we don't know how to prescribe that. But
right.
if people start becoming specialists in that, come to me and I can give you techniques. And there are obviously going to be some snake oil people with that
right.
for sure. But the people that are successful, I mean, that I couldn't think of anything better than for people that have a family member with like dementia or Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or anything where like, hey, we might be able to stave this off a little bit. And it's not just doing crosswords and reading. It's more like we need you to say these repetitive things or do Tai Chi or walk or, and that he's finding those is, it's unbelievable.
Notice that the only things that you hear about for like staving off Alzheimer's are things that can be sold. Sudoku,
yeah.
crossword, like the obviously big crossword is not like running the world, but at the same
those time. Evil devils at crossword. Thing.
Right. But at the same time, Tai Chi isn't making anybody any money. And
yeah.
so like those are the things, like a lot of the stuff is basically just healing techniques that can't be put into a bottle is basically if you just want to like kind of encapsulate all of the things that Doige writes about, it's just things that are very self-sufficient. It's like thought exercises you can have, and they're very rigorous too. It's not as easy as doing a fucking crossword puzzle. It's like takes 4 hours out of your day, and like mm-hmm. you have to exercise and like have these specific thought exercises going on. But it's almost like Western medicine works the best of anything we've found so far, but it isn't the only answer. But like Christian scientists exist for a reason, you know,
mm-hmm.
like it's because there is some truth there that Western medicine just makes no room for. And therefore it has to exist outside of Western medicine. And therefore it's just full of like the snake oil shit. Because Western medicine
so
is
like
so hardline up to this point. These people have to be hardline and be like, well, our kids can't have surgery. It's like, come on, you fucking people.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, that's the worst one. If go to the doctor and pray, you got to
right.
pray that away. Well, give me, how do I pray? What do I say exactly? Are there specific
right.
ways? Because, you know, they might not be that different. Like
right.
you're calling on essentially like a higher power. It might just be yourself,
right.
but a version of yourself within you don't know about to try to like, you're telling your brain. Did you ever like see that Simpsons where Bart's like, got his immune system keeping the flu at bay, and then he like wants to stay home from school, and he goes, let him in. And you see all these guards kind of in his body back away, and all these germs come flooding in. And I think every kid's been there to some degree. If it was like you knew the school lunch was going to be good that day, and you're like, I can beat this. A lot of people now with like, they think they have celiac or a gluten allergy, and really they have more like a wheat intolerance. And there's something there called the nocebo effect.
Right.
So if you think that you're keeping something away, as opposed to like putting something in like placebo, I'm keeping this out and therefore I'm healthier. You can rewire your brain that way. You'll be more, you know, highly active or energetic or whatever you're looking
for. I'm one
for.
Of those because I definitely don't have celiac, but like I buy gluten-free pasta and I feel like so much better after I eat gluten-free pasta. And apparently that's just like complete placebo or nocebo. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so it seems is to there. Work for me. I mean, I think everyone can, you know, a test you had to study for that you figured out how to like, I don't know how I did this. And you just chalk it up to like, hey, it was one of those things. But like our minds, you'd like to think, are capable of really amazing feats.
Right.
Not necessarily being psychic or bending spoons with your mind, but just like keeping yourself healthy. Maybe you could, you know, people that break their hand and then learn how to write with their other one, or violinists, like it activates this very specific part of your, I think the hippocampus or something like that, that fine dexterous skill with your left hand is
right.
Like everything we're doing is activating parts of our brain. And I guess that goes away from consciousness a bit too, because those are the parts
that
you
can be unconscious. Yeah. It's like people who have mastery over their unconscious, like basketball players who can just like calmly walk up to the free throw line at the end of the game and just sink two free throws. Like,
yeah,
they have complete mastery over the part of their brain. Like they can just turn the voice in their head off that's like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit.
Have you seen
can't
any
be too
of
hard, can't be too...
Are you a basketball fan?
Yeah.
Have you seen any of the training Steph Curry does?
No.
It's nuts. Like,
The dribbling drills and the...
Well, the dribbling with both hands. Like, I remember going to basketball camps as a kid, and they kind of have you do stuff like that. But he goes to this facility where it's like one of those sports training centers where they'll have like... He'll be bouncing a ball, like a tennis ball with one hand, and then wearing these goggles that augment your vision almost like virtual reality.
Huh.
So you see things in a very distorted way. So you have to stay really locked in at what you're looking at. Otherwise, it just starts getting out like you're drunk on a boat.
Right.
So he'll be dribbling and then bouncing the ball, wearing these goggles. And it's meant to train his brain to stay focused on kind of more things. He almost has to like calm his brain to a degree where he's not thinking about anything. So that he can focus on these skills so that he's able to really react insanely quick, like faster, you know, reflexes than most people in those situations where like, if you're thinking of just dribbling and then instead someone swats at you, the person in the crowd yells something, a light from a camera goes off.
Right.
You don't really see any of that. You just kind of stay focused on what you're doing.
Yeah. It takes a certain amount of time for a signal to go from the brain to the hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a surprisingly long amount of time. So when Steph Curry is like coming down the lane and somebody jumps in front of him and he crosses over, his brain isn't doing that. His body has just trained itself to automatically do those things. Yeah, there's a really interesting thread that kind of runs through Doige's book about the brain is amazing, but it's usually doing the amazing stuff in the periphery. If you look directly at it, like it's not the stuff that you're focused on. It's the stuff that's like happening basically in the unconscious. But like, yeah, when I would shit out an essay that I thought was terrible, that would be the best work that I did in college. And the stuff that I really focused on and like really tried hard on would be the worst work. And
yeah, poets always say that.
Yeah.
Like, poetry gets, I talked to this friend of mine who's a poet a while ago, and he was just like, oh, it's the best art form because everyone dismisses it so quickly.
Right.
To do it, you really have to like doing it. But I think it's a shame that it's gotten pushed aside so much, because it's really kind of the ultimate art form of just like this spilled out of my brain. You can't just be looking at the paper going, and then this word, and you almost have to like look into the distance and just tap into your unconscious and let it spill out and then look down afterward and go, that was all in my head? What the hell was that?
Yeah.
And you know, essays, things that you do like that, you are kind of surprised afterward. Like, and I've heard like Bob Dylan talk about that.
Right.
Like, I look back at old lyrics, like, who was that? I didn't write that. I could never come up with that. I don't know where it came from.
A lot of speed. A lot of speed.
Dude, that's me, man.
There's this writing exercise I used to do where you would count backwards while writing something, trying to write a story while counting backwards in your head, and stuff you would come up with would be somewhat gibberish, but like it would be like interesting ideas that you could kind of tie together.
When you meet someone that is just indelibly themselves, simple farmer from some small town, like, oh, they don't think, it doesn't seem like they've ever given any thought to what they are, why they might be here. They just, well, my dad dressed this way, so I dress this way, and right. I got to go out and do that because that's what I got to do. And like, man, that's nice. Like, that's right. a cool life to
right.
have where you,
fuck yeah.
that right. is the best. And not that they are ignorant or uneducated or anything like, they're just, and they're not simple. They might be incredibly bright, but just those
practical,
just very practical. And like, yeah. man, they, that is them. Like that DNA yeah. is crystallized and they're never going to change. They're going right. to be that person when they die. And then you meet creative people and you sometimes think like, oh, they just run around existing in this weird menagerie of colors right. and thoughts. But I think like the latter, the creative person, you do have to tap into stuff and pursue it a little bit actively. Maybe there are people that are just born undeniably like, yeah, I've just always been wildly creative, but you know, waking up and coming out of sleep and being in that weird half dream state, mm-hmm. if you write things down and you look and like, what was that?
Yeah.
Your brain's in this loopy space, you know, like yeah. you kind of exist in all these different levels of consciousness.
Yeah.
Like right now, you and I, if we were meant to like do a painting or do something, we'd be like, I'm in the middle of the day. This doesn't feel like I'm in that great, you know, when you stay up really late or do psychedelics or those things where you're like, oh, my brain right now really, like I'd do great if I drew something or painted or wrote a song or something.
Right. Yeah. The flow state is pretty, you need to be disciplined to be able to like call that up on command.
That'd be so great. Just get up and have a schedule 10 to 2. Be very creative.
Yeah, yeah. Be in the flow state. Yeah. Is there anything else you wanted to hit on? Or
no, I'd love to plug my DVD. That
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure.
Well, because it kind of deals with that. I think like I'll always be interested in the difference between the two, the brain and the mind, and kind of how we differentiate between the two. I don't know if there's anything I want to touch on other than like getting into to mental illness and our sort of collective unconsciousness as far as what if all of these things are solvable? What if we're in a period of human history right now where they look back in 50 years and go, oh man, like they're putting people in asylums. They needed to be giving them this drug and exposing them to this sort of like light or this sound.
Right.
Or this what, and it was going to slowly, that'd
yeah,
be amazing.
No, though. That's, I think that that's actually right. I think that that's where we're at because a lot of the stuff that Deutsch is writing about, it feels like it's just people accidentally brushing up against the stuff that they had no idea was there. There's this really interesting story that was in the New York Times about this kid who had autism who nonstop watched Disney movies, and the kid hadn't spoken since he was two.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad started talking to him with a puppet that was the parrot from Aladdin, and the kid just like turned to the parrot and started talking back. And he was like, what? Like, what the fuck? And so they like had this long conversation where he was like asking him what it was like. And the kid was like, my parents normally sound like gibberish to me. But that's the sort of thing that like you hear this one story and then they're not able to replicate it. And it's like, oh, so we brushed up against something. It's almost like Columbus accidentally running into America because he was the one dumbass on the planet who thought the earth was like small enough that like that would be India. Yeah. Everybody else was like, no, it's way, way bigger. And so, you know, we thought the earth looked a certain way and, you know, accidentally ran into something. And you can see these like hilarious maps drawn right after he ran into it where it's just like this kind of small island that is like in the middle of the ocean. And then they figure out how big it is. But it feels like that's where we're at with a lot of mental illness. We're really in the dark in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And just like getting these tiny pinpricks of light. And it seems like a lot of the stuff, it needs to be a combination of drugs and things that can't be put into a bottle.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think I love what we're doing with technology in a lot of ways and optogenetics and stuff like that. But I also think we sometimes get so enamored with like the hardware and the nuts and bolts of like, here's how we fix it, that we're going to add band-aids and alter it that way, as opposed to like, what if it was combining that energy? What if it's not so mystical? What if
right.
you can harness it? And then thinking like, if we did in 1,000 years look back at humanity and like, oh, we didn't realize everyone has their own reality. And
right.
we're trying to consolidate it into like this one reality. If you don't exist in this one, you're screwed. That
right.
kid can only talk to parrots. All right, solved it. What is this guy on the street
right.
that's yelling at people? What if we need to come over to him
right.
and like, oh, you got to shine purple light in his left eye and he's good. You know?
Yeah, 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 exactly. Speaking of the Native American thing, I do think like one thing that could be coming down the pike is have you ever heard of the book 1491? It's like about what America was like before Columbus arrived. And
oh, no.
It was like full of people. Like there were more people in America than there were in Europe. But anyways, they had written languages that we just can't decode.
Mm-hmm.
And So I do think that there could be like a huge renaissance coming in the future once we just like get the Rosetta Stone. Once we even bother like trying to decode, everybody's like, oh yeah, there's like millions and millions of people's thoughts and philosophies and histories for thousands of years in the Americas before Columbus arrived. And like, they just haven't bothered like trying to translate them. And it's like, once they do, it could be like the Renaissance where like, they suddenly started becoming interested in like the classics again.
Yeah.
You know, you like suddenly get this infusion of new thoughts. And it does seem like a lot of the stuff that we don't have a grasp on is a lot of the stuff that Native Americans would be better at.
Yeah, they also, I mean, there were tribes that were hostile. And I think there's an evolution part of just the whole existence where they would have become the bankers and the duplicitous types.
Right, totally.
Kept people down and all that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's fascinating. I don't know. I think the world is so big and mysterious that like getting locked into, well, it's just how it happened. Just so boring. I mean, it's so much more optimistic to think that like, oh, we're in a state right now, we're going to be embarrassed about it. Like locking people in prisons because they were addicts and we didn't understand anything that led up to that. And we'll look back in the future and be like, oh, here's how we'll handle that.
Solitary? Solitary confinement? The worst. Yeah, I think that's going to be the big one that we look back on. Just prison and solitary.
Yeah.
It's going to look really bad. It's going to look really bad, you guys. You can hear David talk about stuff like this on his DVD, One-Headed Beast. What does that refer to?
Oh, just what we've been talking about, man. Yeah. Like, it's, we always associate the two-headed beast being so terrible, but, you know, it's equally difficult having this one. Yeah, and I have a podcast called The Space Cave. You can go to thespacecave.com, or, like, everything of me is at davidhunsberger.com.
Okay, cool. Cool, man. Well, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks
that
for having
really
me.
Fun.
When the lights shut off, and it's my turn to settle down, my main concern, promise that you will sing about me.
That was our conversation, and these are the footnotes. We're listening to Sing About Me, I'm Dying of Thirst, off of Kendrick Lamar's album Good Kid, Mad City, which is probably my favorite album of the past 10 to 15 years. This song is an incredible piece of writing. The first verse, especially, it's written from the point of view of a kid whose brother died in Kendrick's arms the night before, talking to Kendrick about how he wishes he could feel something as pure as when he was wearing Dun-Da-Duns, the superhero underwear that I certainly rocked as a child. Yeah, nostalgia is as pure a feeling as exists for lots of people. You know, if you never find true love or your true passion, nostalgia for when you were a kid is as good as it gets. It's interesting. I can sort of locate the times I was happiest by hearing the music I listened to at that time. Like, my last year of public school, eighth grade, before going to Catholic high school, has a bunch of songs that just make me feel really deeply, warmly nostalgic. Basically, I'll have Tupac's album, Me Against the World, these two records by Anita Baker and Carly Simon that my mom played a lot in her car when I was seven, REM's Automatic for the People in fifth and sixth grade, and then not a lot up until about 9-10 years ago, which happened to be when I started dating my wife and launched Cracked. And you hear the results of that period of warm nostalgia in the music I play most weeks on this podcast, actually. You know, I listened to a lot of great music in between 8th grade and 10 years ago, 2006. But the nostalgia I feel when I hear that music doesn't have that same warmth. Anyways, it's an interesting way to chart your life and your memories. You know, because those actually weren't what I would have thought of as the happiest time of my life. They don't make sense as the happiest moments of my life from a narrative perspective. Speaking of Tupac, the song is also about the ability for someone to live on in music after they die. That's some hippie bullshit you hear when you lose someone you love, that they live on in our memories. But again, it's some hippie bullshit I'm going to have to give a closer look after my conversation with David Hunsberger. We're not just meat and bones. Western medicine seems to be admitting that. There's something almost impressionistic and poetic that you can't put in your beaker. There, smart guy. Why don't you do me up an equation that explains why Tupac rules, you Poindexter? Then I'd flip over his lunch tray. Also, if you enjoyed this episode at all, I'm going to have to demand that you go download the Radio Lab episode Words, because a bunch of the really interesting stuff that I summarized and made reference to is from that episode, and that's just such a brilliant show, especially the early episodes, of which Words is one. Of which Words is one. That's a normal phrase. And that's it for this week's episode. Thanks again to David Huntsberger for joining us. You should go to davidhuntsberger.com and get his stand-up DVD. He gave me a copy. I immediately checked it out after our conversation, and it's hilarious and really smart. He's one of those guys who just gets up on stage and you can tell he's just like saying the shit he actually thinks about. Thanks to engineer Brett, who you can follow at Brett Rader, R-A-D-E-R. You can follow me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter, both on Twitter. It's a micro blogging site. You should check it out. You should also check out our playlist on Spotify. Just search Cracked Podcast and you'll find most of the music we play here, there. And yeah, that's it. We'll be back next week with more podcasts. Talk to you then.
I woke up this morning and figured I'd call you in case I'm not here tomorrow. I'm hoping that I can borrow a peace of mind. I'm behind on what's really important. My mind is really distorted. I find nothing but trouble in my life. I'm fortunate you believe in a dream. This orphanage we call a ghetto is quite a routine. And last night was just another distraction or a reaction of what we consider madness. I know exactly what happened. You ran outside when you heard my brother cry for help. Held him like a newborn baby and made him feel like everything was alright in a fight he tried to put up, but the type of bullet that stuck had went against his will. Last blood spill on your hands, my plan's rather vindictive. Everybody's a victim in my eyes. When I ride, it's a murderous rhythm. And outside became pitch black, a demon glued to my back, whispering, get him, I got him, and I ain't give a fuck. That same mentality I told my brother not to duck. In actuality, it's a trip how we trip off of colors. I wonder if I ever discover a passion like you and recover the life that I knew as a youngin' in pajamas and thunderlands. When thunder comes, it rains, cats and dogs dumb. Niggas like me never prosper. Prognosis of a problem child. I'm proud and well devoted. This Pyru shit been in me forever. So forever, I'ma push it wherever, whenever. And I love you cause you love my brother like you did. Just promise me you tell this story when you make it big. And if I die before your album drop, I hope.
Promise that you will. Same promise that you will.
Song about my sister on your tape and called it Section 80. The message resembled Brenda's got a baby. What's crazy was I was hearing about it but doubted your ignorance. How could you ever just put her on blast and shit, judging her passing shit? Well, it's completely my future. Her nigga behind me right now asking for ass and shit. And I'ma need that $40 even if I gotta fuck, suck, and swallow in the parking lot. Gonzalez Park, I'm followed by a merry man and father of three. My titties bounce on the cadence of his tingling keys. Matter of fact, he my favorite cause he tipped me with ease. He got a cousin named David and I seen him last week. This is the life of another girl damaged by the system. These foster homes, I run away and never do miss them. See my hormones just run away, and if I can get them back to where they used to be, then I'd probably be in the denim of a family gene that show women how to be woman, or better yet a leader. You need her to learn something, then you probably need to beat her. That's how I was taught. Three niggas in one room, first time I was tossed, and I'm exhausted. But fuck that, sorry for your lost shit. My sister died in vain, but what point are you trying to gain? If you can't fit the pumps, I walk in, I'll wait. Your rebuttal a little too late, and if you have an album date, just make sure I'm not in the zone, cause I don't need the attention, bring enough of that on my own. And matter of fact, did I mention that I physically feel great? A doctor's approval is a waste of time, I know I'm straight. I probably live longer than you and never fade away. I'll never fade away, I'll never fade away. I know my fate, and I'm on the grind for this cake. I'ma get it or die trying. I'm eyeing every male gender with intentions of buying. You lying to these motherfuckers talking about you can help them with my story.
Settle down, my main concern. Promise that you will sing about me. Promise that you will sing about me.
Hey, Earwolf listeners, this is Hillary Frank from The Longest Shortest Time. On our show, we talk to parents.
I just put sex on the list of things that I have to do that day as soon as the baby goes to sleep.
We talk to kids.
Sex in a boat. Sex in a wolf. Sex in Jupiter.
And we talk about how those kids were made in the first place.
I'm pulling down his pants, you know, hurry up, just do it.
The Longest Shortest Time. It's a family show for grown-ups. Listen at longestshortesttime.com, earwolf.com, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.